Good morning. This is Focus 580, our telephone talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us this morning. In this part of Focus 580, we'll be looking at this question. Do early childhood intervention programs that are aimed at helping kids from disadvantaged backgrounds, the kind of programs that we think of when we use a word like or name like Head Start, do these programs have long-term benefits? It's something that within research, education, and political circles has been the subject of some debate for some time. That is, just what sort of benefits do these programs have? Do they benefit children in the short run? And even a bigger question, do they benefit them in the long run? We'll be talking this morning with the lead author of a study that was published last month, was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, that gives a qualified yes to that question, finding that at least at one particular program, a very good program in Chicago, does have long-term benefits, and you can see them even when kids have gone all the way through school to the point where they are in high school. We'll talk about the study and its implications this morning with Arthur Reynolds. He's professor at University of Wisconsin-Madison. He is involved with the Weissman Center on Mental Retardation and Human Development there and is particularly interested in subjects like these prevention research and the influence that family and school have on the success or lack of success of low-income children. We'll be talking this morning about this study, and as we talk, of course, questions are welcome from people who are listening. If you're here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, the number 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line, so that means that anyone who's listening around Illinois, Indiana, any place the signal will travel, if it would be a long-distance call, use the toll-free line, and we'll pay for the call. That's 800-222-9455. And again, if you match the numbers with letters on the phone, you get WILL, which may or may not make it easier, 333-WILL, and toll-free 800-222-WILL. Well, Professor Reynolds, hello.
Hello.
Thanks for talking with us today.
Thanks for inviting me.
And also we want to say thanks to the folks there at Wisconsin Public Radio for making it possible for us to have this high-quality audio connection with you.
Right.
And maybe just a little bit of background. It does seem to me from the little bit that I've done on the subject that there has been some, I don't know if controversy is the right word, but certainly debate around this question. Do programs, the kinds of things we think of when we talk about Head Start, do they have long-term benefits? And it seems that there was much more agreement that said, yes, these programs are good for kids while they're in them, and maybe for a couple of years after. But over the long term, as years go by, when you then compare groups that are otherwise the same, the differences seem to wash out so that it gets to the point when kids are teenagers, those who, other things being equal, who were in a program like this and who weren't, there doesn't seem to be any difference between them anymore. So it seemed like the question you set out to try to answer was one that people have been talking about for a long time now.
Yes, that's right, and I think that's a good summary of where, you know, the field has been in trying to understand if the short-term, the demonstrated short-term effects of programs like Head Start, you know, if they continue and if they persist into adolescence. And I think at one level, because, you know, these programs are prevention programs, they're trying to prevent school failure and underachievement, that ultimately the goal should be that we should have these, you know, long-term effects if the programs are high in quality. But I think, you know, there's a couple issues there. The first is that it's very hard to do these longitudinal studies with large samples of children because you have to try to track and to locate successfully after 10 or 15 years of program participation, you know, the educational and social status of kids. And so one of the things that has made it harder to answer the question is the fact that when you follow up 15 years later, it's really hard to get the entire sample that you started with. And if you don't get the entire sample or most of it, it's hard to make any inferences about whether there's a positive effect, a positive long-term effect. Mm-hmm. So that's one issue. But we have been, you know, increasingly successful in the last few years with a lot of different studies around the country looking at long-term effects. And in our case, we were able to locate most of the children, over 80% of the children that started in the child parent centers, mm-hmm. which is a lot like Head Start. And we find when we are successful in locating kids that the benefits can be quite substantial. So I think the reason to look for long-term effects is, one, there's a challenge of research, but also the other time that we do expect these early intervention programs, because they're happening in a very important time in kids' lives, that if they start out more successful because of the program, that success should carry over into other domains. And that's why there's so much interest in early childhood intervention and the long-term effects.
Well, just in a moment, we'll talk about the Chicago Child Parent Center program, so we can talk about its design and what it's like. But just for a moment, let's talk about the individuals that you studied. You managed to put together a group and follow them starting in, I think, 1985. They were all born in 1980, went into the program when they were around five, and you managed to follow enough of them so that you had had a good enough data set so that you could say something about what they were like by the time that they were in high school.
That's right, yes. And they, being born in 1980, they would have been in preschool in 1983 to 1985. And then we picked them up basically in the beginning of kindergarten. And so the sample that we're following, working with, is now age 21. And we took kind of the entire group of kids that were born in 1980 who completed the child parent centers in kindergarten, about 1,000 of them, and have followed their educational progress and interests, you know, through the school years, mostly in the Chicago public schools. And, you know, we've compared their progress to children, about 500 children who began kindergarten, not in the child parent centers, but in other early childhood programs in the Chicago public schools. But these kids did not have kind of preschool experiences. A few of them had Head Start, but by and large, there was no preschool experience for the comparison group. Mm. And so with collaboration and partnership with the Chicago Public Schools, we were able to, you know, to look at their progress over time. So it's a very kind of a unique design. It's sort of like a natural experiment where we just kind of look at kids that participated in different kinds of programs. One was much more intensive than the other, and look at their progress over time. But yeah, that's kind of how it started, and the schools have been very supportive of it over the years.
And apparently one unique feature of this study has to do with the nature of the program that you studied, the Child Parent Center. Previous studies had looked at demonstration projects, but this apparently was the first time that you had actually looked at something that was a real-world program.
Yeah, that's right, and it is very similar to Head Start, but this is a program that's federally financed by Title I from the U.S. Department of Education. It's a routinely implemented program. It's existed since 1967, and it is kind of a larger scale equivalent to what you would find in these smaller model demonstration programs. So what this study does that other studies can't do is that we look at the effects of a larger scale, federally financed, kind of established program, and we look to see what their long-term effects are. And as it turns out, their long-term effects, you know, can be very similar to what you find in model demonstration programs.
Mm-hmm. And just, we can come back to this in some detail, but we probably should mention what it is that you found in terms of these long-term effects. You found that those children that started out in this program, when you compared them with peers who were as much alike as you could, other than the fact that some of them were in this program and some of them were not, when you looked at them later when they were in high school, it was these kids who were in this program were more likely to finish high school and less likely to get in trouble with the law than their peers that were not in this program.
That's right. And I think in addition to those two outcomes, we also found that kids that participated in the child parent centers were much less likely also to need school remedial services, like to be retained in grade and to receive special education services in the schools that are very expensive to provide. And in those three areas, you know, higher rates of high school completion by age 20, lower rates of juvenile arrest for both violent and nonviolent offenses, and the reduction in rates of school remedial services. You add those three together, and those are the commonly kind of long-term outcomes that people look at, those are quite substantial benefits. And we're talking about, you know, reducing rates of problem behavior from anywhere from 30% to 40% over and above the comparison group. And so not only are the outcomes important in terms of expenditures for them can be costly, but the reductions that we saw in our study, you know, are substantial. That is certainly means a lot, I think, to the field in trying to understand, you know, can these programs prevent problem behaviors later, and can they promote, you know, positive outcomes like high school completion? And the answer is yes. Mm-hmm.
Did you look at other measures of success in school going beyond the question, did they graduate from high school or not?
Yeah, we did earlier in adolescence, because what preceded the study that was reported in the Journal of the American Medical Association was that we focused earlier on differences in standardized test scores. And we have found consistently up to the age of 15 that the children in the program have higher levels of reading and math achievement relative to the comparison group. And that's been really consistent. So that's really one of the reasons we even looked for longer-term effects on high school completion and juvenile arrest, because we have found yearly since age 5 a big literacy advantage of kids that participate in the program. So that's one outcome. We've also looked at some family outcomes, parent involvement in children's education, the parents' expectations for the children's ultimate educational attainment. And we do find that parents are much more supportive and involved in their children's education if they participate in the program. And they also expect their children to go farther in school and probably provide the supports to help them do that. And so those are a couple areas that we've looked at in addition to the three main outcomes.
I should introduce probably at this point again our guest for anyone who's tuned in the last 5 or 10 minutes. We're speaking with Arthur Reynolds. He is associate professor at University of Wisconsin-Madison at the Weissman Center on Mental Retardation and Human Development. And we're talking about a study that he was involved with looking at the long-term effects of a very good, a very high-quality early childhood intervention program, and whether indeed over the long term it benefits the children who take part. And the study, which was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association last month, found that indeed it did have long-term benefits, and these kids were more likely to graduate from high school, do better in school, less likely to get in trouble with the law than their peers, who in other respects were the same, except they didn't go through this program. And again, as we talk here, questions are welcome. 333-WILL, toll free, 800-222-WILL. We should ask you to talk a little bit about the program, its design, and what is it that perhaps would set it apart from other kinds of early childhood programs that are aimed at providing some help to kids who come from disadvantaged backgrounds.
Yeah, I think most people are familiar with some elements of Head Start, so it does follow in concept what Head Start is about, and Head Start really provides four kind of domains of services, kind of child education services in terms of center-based preschool education, you know, beginning at age 3. Family services, encouragement for families to get involved in both the governance and, you know, activities in their children's education. Health services, providing health services, free lunches, other kinds of supports, nurse, medical checkups, things like that. And also social services. If families need outreach activities, they need, mental health services or other community support services, that there'll be kind of resource mobilization from community workers. And so those are really the four main elements, and the Child Parent Center program follows pretty much that, you know, exactly as far as comprehensive services. So they're not just doing one thing like providing enrichment in the classroom. But I think what sets the Child Parent Center program apart is really two things, that they try to blend in kind of very structured literacy activities in the classroom to kind of bolster, you know, school or early school achievement and word analysis and numeracy skills that are so critical for literacy development. And so they hone in on that probably more than most other early childhood programs like Head Start. And the second thing they do that I think sets it apart is that they have much more intensive parent involvement than other programs, and that's including Head Start. And what that means is that each center has a parent resource teacher that that staffs a parent resource room, you know, a physical location that parents go to for educational activities with other parents and through educational workshops, and that's a room available in the centers, and that provides much greater opportunities for multiple kinds of involvement for parents. And we find that having those resources available, parents participate more in the education of their children than in other programs. And so those are, in a nutshell, those are the two main elements of the program: literacy-rich environment that's structured, and also heavily intensive parent involvement.
Mm-hmm. And those things are, when you look at other similar kinds of programs, those things are not stressed as much, or is it an issue that partly it comes down to the resources that the people who run the program have?
Yes, that's right. I think, in a nutshell, anyway, the cost of the Child Parent Center program is, you know, is very similar to Head Start. But I think as far as how you deploy the resources, how you use the resources that you have available to you, you know, I think will differ, you know, locally and regionally, depending on what the interests of the program in that location. But I think in the Child Parent Center case, I think it's the concept is the same, but how they deploy resources is a little different. Like they, for example, they really don't provide nearly as much of the health resources, the health services that Head Start provides, that Head Start is mandated to do as part of their funding through the Department of Health and Human Services. The Child Parent Center, you know, may use resources that they could have used for health services. And they do provide some, but they put most of their efforts, increased kind of intensity into parent involvement. And then their educational program in the classroom, it is more structured toward literacy and academic preparedness for school. And so their philosophy of education, I think, is a little different than other early childhood programs for at-risk kids. So I think it's how they deploy the resources, and they provide more intensity, more resources to do these things instructionally and family-wise. And that's what makes a difference, because that literacy push, literacy advantage, and the parent involvement advantage that kids get from the program, we have direct evidence that those are the two things responsible, really, for the long-term effects that we find.
Mm. So, and not to put too fine a point on this, but it sounds as if there are lessons to be learned from looking at this program and the success that your study finds, it is that it's not so much a matter of having resources or not having them, but it's how it is you decide you're going to spend your time, and that there are other programs that would be able to do to structure their programs this way. It's not a matter of saying, well, that'd be nice to do that, but we just don't have the resources. There are the people that have the resources, but it's just a matter of how it is we're going to, what it is that we decide is important.
Yes, absolutely. And what we try to find out, to figure out in research in early childhood intervention, is what are the most essential ingredients of programs, the most essential components that are really causing the effects that we see, you know, down the road. And, you know, in the Child Parent Center case, it is very clear that the literacy advantage that kids get really provide a foundation for all the other effects that you see. And it's the same with, with parent involvement. And that's in a variety of ways, so through, you know, many, many field trips and other support activities in the classroom. And, of course, obviously, because it's a public school program, I mean, another key part of it is the teachers, because it's the teachers that end up, you know, deploying the resources and who are there with children, nurturing their development very early. And obviously having teachers that are well qualified, that are well paid, that have specialization in early childhood education, all those things are true for the Child Parent Center program. And that's not true for many other early care environments out there, that the teachers don't have the qualifications to provide, you know, high quality education services. And so this is one of the benefits of being a public school program, that the teachers are paid as public school teachers, and there isn't the turnover that you find in many child care settings. A lot of Head Start programs, for example, don't pay their teachers nearly at the same as you would find in public schools.
What sort of requirements are there for Head Start programs? Are there certain things that every program must do, or is every program, in a sense, on its own to decide what it thinks is important and what they're going to do?
Well, the basic concept of the services, I mean, the four essential kind of services, all programs are responsible and mandated to provide, you know, basic child education, family support services, health services, you know, physical exams, dental exams, and outreach, social services. And there are coordinators for all four of those key things. So the concept, so on paper, the model looks the same, but kind of the actual curriculum that you follow, you know, whether it's home-based or center-based, the number of home visits, how many years of participation that children have the opportunity to participate in, all those things those decisions are made at the local level within this broad kind of purview of the four services. And so the model is, you know, is similar, and they do all those four things, but it's kind of, you know, how long you do it for and how many years of participation and the actual activities that are implemented at the local level in the child education area especially, you know, can vary from location to location. And so, and that's one of the reasons Head Start is so popular, that it has that local flexibility, that people in Washington aren't deciding, well, this is how you should implement your program, that there's flexibility there. And of course, there's also training of staff and ongoing professional development in early childhood education that all programs must provide. But there is a flexibility, so programs can kind of tailor the kind of things they do to the interests of the families and the communities.
We're just about at our midpoint here, and let me introduce again our guest. We're speaking with Arthur Reynolds from University of Wisconsin-Madison. His interests include child development, the influences of family and school on low-income kids, and he is the lead author of a study that was published and got a fair amount of national attention last month. It was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, looking at one particular program, this one that we mentioned, the Chicago Child Parent Center program, and comparing the kids who had been in this program back when they were in preschool and following a good number of them all the way through to high school. The idea was they wanted to try and answer the question, are there long-term benefits to these children of having been in the program when you compare them with kids that, as much as you can, are the same except, well, they weren't in the program. And the authors of the study found there were indeed long-term benefits, that the children who had been in this program were more likely to finish high school, they were less likely to get in trouble with the law, and generally did have better educational performance than the kids who didn't have the opportunity to go through this program. So we'll continue to talk here. And again, questions are welcome if you'd like to call in. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So at any point here, you can call in. All we ask of callers is people just be brief if they can, so we can accommodate as many folks as possible and kind of keep things moving along. Let me ask you one sort of policy implication. The Bush administration apparently is preparing a pre-reading curriculum for the country's Head Start centers. And your study, I would suggest that that it probably would be a good idea, at least the program that you studied had this very intensive literacy program. Do you think that that's a trying to stress that in these other programs, in these Head Start programs, is a good thing?
Yes, I do. I think the overall, focus of the child parent program, is structured. They do spend a lot of time in literacy activities, and they do it in a variety of ways, through both in the classroom and also out in the world, in terms of going on field trips and things to kind of get kind of a language rich early learning experiences. And so I think the focus that we need, especially in children that come from that reside in low-income families, that the programs should be more structured than they have been traditionally, and they should be more focused on literacy, because again, this literacy, early literacy advantage, is really kind of the process by which you find these long-term effects. So I think those directions I think have been needed for a long time in early childhood programs, and I think the only caveat would be is that one, that you can't ignore the need for comprehensive services, and so there shouldn't be kind of a strict reliance just on literacy and avoiding all the other things that are also important, like mm-hmm. parent involvement, and you can provide kind of structured education as well in a lot of different ways, and the point is to be kind of have a literacy rich experience, and so one curriculum may not be the best thing, but I think the emphasis, though, should clearly be on the directions that the Bush administration is taking.
Hmm. Well, that indeed, that was the flip side here, that that some people were saying, well, this looks like it's a good thing that we're putting this influence on literacy. However, there was, I guess, some concern voiced about the administration's emphasis on mainly on literacy, and their maybe ranking those other things like parental involvement and social services and healthcare, all of that stuff, really very low, much below the reading.
Sure, and it's a balance. I think in the end, it's a balance, and I think it's important to look at the successes and kind of the failures in the field as well over time. And I guess in the child parent centers, One of the reasons that it has been so successful is they've been able to successfully blend and balance these essential components very well together, and that takes time and effort, and clearly the literacy part of it is important, but there's a lot of ways to enrich the literacy environments of children. So having a kind of a single national curriculum of direct instruction, is only one way to do that. There's a lot of other ways to do it. We find that kids have to experience the world and go on field trips and the like. But I think the other thing is that, I guess to go back to the parent involvement, that as much as you want to spend more time on literacy, you can do it with parent volunteers in the classroom, parents participating in educational and governance activities in the centers, in these high-risk settings and in other settings. And that, you can have both, and you can also have health services as well.
We have a caller and would welcome others. Again, the number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. Here's someone to talk with in Urbana on our line number one.
Good morning.
Yes.
I would like to know what is the difference between this program and Even Start program.
The Even Start program.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'm listening, of course. I'm going to hang up.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call.
Sure. The Even Start program begins at the birth of the child and also in the prenatal area. So it's kind of what's called a 0-3 program that's primarily focused on providing health services, both prenatally and right after the birth of the child. The Child Parent Center program begins at age 3. It's not a birth to age 3 program, but it's a preschool education program. And so that essentially would be the difference.
Mm. All right. And I encourage other people, if you have questions, you can give us a call, 333-WILL, and toll-free 800-222-WILL. I don't really intend to join into those ranks of those people who are hammering on the Chicago schools, because they certainly have a lot of problems, but I suppose some people might think that it was a little bit ironic that in Chicago, where there's been so much criticism of the school program there, and it seems to have so many problems, that here they would have something that would be a national model for providing services to disadvantaged preschool kids.
It is ironic. but I think this has been kind of a, this program has been kind of a, you know, a secret in the Chicago public schools, you know, for 35 years, because if you actually look at the history, this program, the Child Parent Center program, is the second oldest federally funded preschool program in the United States, after Head Start. Head Start started in 1965. Child Parent Center started in 1967, and I think it also is the first use of Title I funds. These are monies that go to school districts that serve high proportions of low-income children, just called Title I, but it also is the first Title I preschool program in the U.S. And so I think because it's relatively small, it's only in about 23 schools, and it's only in Chicago, it hasn't gotten the attention that you find. But even within the school system, I mean, it's a massive school system, 450,000 students. You know, there's many, you know, hundreds of schools. And so it's easy to lose, you know, programs and things inside the system. But I think, you know, in the early childhood field, I mean, this program's been known for a while, and I think it obviously is at a much higher priority now, because we find these very long-term effects, and we don't find these effects for a lot of other programs for children and youth. And so I think it's important. The attention the program has gotten, I think, is well-deserved, but I think it, you know, it kind of illuminates probably the need for more focus on early investments in children and families.
You talked a little bit earlier about one of the advantages perhaps of this program is the level of training that the teachers have, and it's one of the difficulties, I think, when you look across the country at various kinds of child care programs. One of the frequent criticisms is that we don't pay the people who work in them very much. We don't perhaps expect of them what we should, and that's sad because their jobs are so very important. The teachers that are part of this program, what sort of training do they have?
They all have at least bachelor's degrees in education, in early childhood education, and they also have to get early childhood certificates, you know, licensed through the state. And because they are, I mean, relative to other teachers, relative to child care workers, clearly they're well paid, and they get, you know, salary of a public school teacher. And, you know, they participate in ongoing professional development. And many of the teachers in our, when we were doing our study, certainly had a lot of experience, you know, 10 or 15 years of teaching experience in early childhood settings. And so if you compare that to what the typical child care worker, you know, it's the difference between night and day, and that level of training, I think, is certainly a source of the effectiveness of the program. And, you know, even in Head Start, only about a third of Head Start programs are in public schools, where teachers would earn, you know, a public school salary and be required to have a bachelor's degree. So most early childhood programs that aren't connected to schools, you know, usually pay their teachers less well and don't have the supports and training needed to really provide high-quality early childhood education. And that may be another lesson from this study, that I think public schools the implementers of early childhood care and education programs, you know, may in fact be the wave of the future, because there's some commitment to providing, you know, a decent wage and to have, you know, ongoing professional development activities, as well as, you know, bachelor's degree level, you know, teachers.
Hmm. Well, we did talk about how this particular program sort of stands far and above maybe other programs, other like Head Start programs that don't have an attachment to schools. But then would you take this program and maybe compare it with other similar programs that are attached to schools? Does this even stand above those kinds of programs? And even when you look at programs that are similar, is there something about this program that says they're they're doing a better job. It's something special even among its peers.
I think it is even among other state-funded programs. There's a lot of states now that are providing and opening their own early childhood programs that are connected to schools that are funded through state funds rather than federal funds. The Child Parents Program actually is mostly federally financed, although there's some local support from schools for some elements of the program. But I think, it's certainly the case. I mean, there's a lot of good Head Start programs out there. I think the issue is that the quality is uneven. But when you compare state programs, the Child Parent Center programs, and the state programs are funded through schools and are located in public schools, you find a couple things. One is the Child Parent Centers tend to provide more comprehensive services than these other state-run programs. They do, home visitation, for example. They provide community outreach. They have these school community representatives that try to help mobilize resources to families in need. And they also have, a parent classroom, a parent resource room in each of the centers. And so most state-run programs, that's very unusual for early childhood programs to have like a separately funded and staffed parent resource room. And so there are more comprehensive services. And the focus is still more on literacy even compared to public school programs. And they do a wide variety of structured activities. They have recommended instructional activities, without ignoring the importance of play and other things. But it's that philosophy of academic preparedness and literacy that I think also sets the Child Parent Center program apart from its public school peers.
What is their budget, their per pupil expenditure? Do you know?
It's about the same of Head Start. So the yearly per child, so for 1 year of a half-day preschool program, it's about $4,500 per child per year. And that's about what it is in Head Start as well. The typical state-run program, the expenditure per child for 1 year for also a half-day program is about $3,000. Maybe up to $3,500. So the Child Parent Center, on average, is spending at least $1,000 more per child to provide the resources that they do in the programs. Mm.
And does all that money come from the federal government?
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's the only part that isn't is there is what's called a follow-on or a school-age part of the program. That's funded through the state of Illinois, the Chapter 1 funds through the state of Illinois, because I guess the one thing we haven't talked about is the Child Parent Center program. It doesn't really end in kindergarten because kids can continue their participation in the program in the neighborhood school by enrolling in first grade. And so there's a added component to the program, a school-age program that can go up to third grade that provides funds for things like reduced class size and continued parent support activities. That part of the program is actually funded by the state of Illinois.
We have about 10 minutes left. We have a caller we'll get right to. I'd like to introduce again our guest. We're talking with Arthur Reynolds. He's professor of social work at University of Wisconsin-Madison and was the lead author of the study that we've been talking about. It was published in May, I believe, in the Journal of the American Medical Association, looking at the long-term effects of an early childhood intervention program in Chicago on the educational achievement and the juvenile arrest records of kids, following them from the point that they were about five to the point that they were 20 and that they were in high school, and indeed found that there were long-term benefits. The kids were more likely to graduate from high school, less likely to get in trouble than their peers who weren't in this program. We have a caller here. We welcome others. Let's go to our Urbana caller here, line number one. Hello.
Yeah, I have two questions. One is, I was reading this article that said that parents really, in reference to 0 to 3, that parents really aren't very good about instinctively knowing what to do with their kids. And to quote one line, in fact, it said, talking, reading, singing, and playing must be carefully matched to a child's level of development, temperament, and mood, or the child will tune out or even cringe from the interaction, unquote. And I think especially that temperament and mood thing, I would think would be hard to do in a public or a school setting. And so I was kind of curious if any of that exists at the age level you guys were working in. And then number two, I was wondering if there's any kind of social isolation experienced by these kids, since you know they seem to have been, you know, kicked up to a higher level of achievement here. And I'll hang up and listen to what you have to say. Thanks.
Okay. Well, Professor Reynolds?
Sure. On the first question, we find that's why the parent involvement component is so critical, because in the parent resource rooms, as I mentioned, that there's a lot of attention to improving parents' knowledge and skills about child development and how to identify kind of milestones of development when children can begin to read and to put letters together in form. And so they do participate in the centers in a very kind of supportive parent support groups, where they get kind of workshops and interact with other parents about knowledge, about kind of how to work with a child, how to read to a child, how to kind of educational activities and other activities to participate in with a child. And so that's done in the very nurturing and kind of parent support groups in the center. So we find that's very possible. So improving knowledge and, the parents' capabilities to interact and to provide kind of nurturing, language-rich environments for kids, we find that's important. Encouraging going to the library and how to read books and basic knowledge of child development is a big part of the parent program. We find that it is a successful part, and parents do become much better, much more confident in their abilities. A lot of them, obviously, to do this without a lot of assistance, but we do find that's a major success part of the program, because, let's face it, a lot of the parents here haven't had good educational experiences themselves. So that's how they do it. And home visitation is another way. So to go into the natural environment of the family is another way to address, the first question. So they do it in a lot of ways. The second question about do these kids become socially isolated because they stand farther apart from their peers academically? And I guess no, I don't think that's true, because most of the kids in the program, they're going to neighborhood schools with other children that they grow up with in the neighborhoods. And they try to accommodate and try to lead, balanced lives, both socially and psychologically, as well as academically. And so you have, that promise of balance. But it is true that over time in elementary and high school, the kids from the Child Parent Center program, they are more likely to go to better schools where they are around kids that are more academically interested and prepared than other kids. But that could lead to some isolation, but by and large we don't find that to be the case.
Were, and I don't know if you have data to answer this question, but were the children that you looked at any more likely than their peers to go on to some post-secondary education?
Yeah, we're just looking at that now, but right now, because kids in the Child Parent Center program, the sample we're following, are more likely to complete high school, we are finding that it is carrying over. I guess you would expect it to carry over. There's more kids in the one group more likely to finish high school. They're also more likely to attend college. Mm-hmm. And so we are finding that the differential as well in terms of attending college. And we're just about to complete, our data collection and gathering information to really look at that for the entire 1,500 or our sample. But of the half of the sample we pretty much have good information on, we do find that the same pattern holds for college attendance. And that will be one of the key questions, obviously, because high school completion in today's world is great. It's essential for college, but it's not enough to kind of secure economic independence in this advanced kind of technological society we live in.
So sounds as if you're hoping perhaps to continue following as many of these kids as you, I mean, maybe not right to call them kids, young adults now, as many of them as you can for as long as you can, just to kind of see what happens?
Yeah, I'm still trying to wean myself off the kid term. They're young adults now, but yeah, you're absolutely right. I think our interest is to follow and to understand, you know, children's kind of early adult success through the age of 25. And so we would like to continue to look at kind of employment, you know, family circumstances and college, you know, completion. And so I think we have at least 5 years to go for this project, and those will be the key things, looking at college graduation, post-college, graduate school, employment, you know, family interests and circumstances. And so those will be the, you know, the next series of things we'll do. And it looks, so far things look promising, but we'll continue to keep at it.
Mm. Yeah, there's a question, in a sense this perhaps comes out of the question the last caller posed about how these kids do socially with their peers. You did find here over the long run measurable differences between these students and their peers that weren't involved in this particular program. But I wonder, as things were going along, if you saw these kids, you saw them in school, you saw them on the playground, you saw them wherever you saw them, whether you would, something about them would strike you and you would say, there's something different about this child as compared with this child over here. Would there have been differences that would be that noticeable? Or is it the kind of thing that then later, considering all things, you'd say, well, yeah, I think we can find differences. For example, this child graduated from high school and this child didn't, but earlier in their life, we wouldn't have looked at them and said, well, I think this kid has greater chance for success than this kid.
I think, I mean, there's not a lot of differences, but, you know, there's something, I guess the interest in school, the, you know, the commitment to school and engagement in maybe school activities, you know, may be a little higher. I mean, that's one thing I think you could observe as time goes on. And that in that kids probably in the program would be around, hang around kids that also have, you know, interest in school, furthering their education and the importance of education. So I think the big difference, I think, between kids from the program and those in the comparison group or not, or more generally in the neighborhoods, is their kind of interest in commitment to school. And that's really what the philosophy of the program is about. And obviously, and just in terms of, I mean, academic performance, I think, you know, on average, kids would be a little more academically advanced than their cohort group would be. But those are, I think, the main things that you'd see. We also find that actually kids are, they seem to be a little more optimistic about the future, maybe because of their interest in school, and that families explicitly know more than anyone else of the importance of schools as a way out of poverty. And we find that can lead to optimism. And mm-hmm. So kids, rather than be more skeptical about life, tend to be more optimistic. So I thought that would be another, I think, feature that you would tend to find among these kids.
We're going to have to stop here because we've come to the end of the time. We want to say to you, Professor Reynolds, thank you very much for talking with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for inviting me. I enjoyed it.
Our guest, Arthur Reynolds, he's professor of social work at University of Wisconsin-Madison. We also want to say thanks very much to the folks there at Wisconsin Public Radio for helping us to have this high-quality audio connection with Professor Reynolds.